Well, good morning, everybody.
Morning.
We are in week 3 of The Garden, and in this series, we've been looking at the fundamentals of spiritual growth and really the framework that the Bible gives us for how we grow spiritually. And in many ways and in many places, the framework kind of consists in the metaphor of a garden. There are just a variety of places in the Bible that connect spiritual growth to what happens in a garden. So the first week of the series, we said we need to have a vision for our lives, that no garden that a person plants is planted without a vision. No successful garden, I should say. And we talked about how God in the Bible gives us the vision for growth, and that in many ways it's about fruit. We talked about the fruits of the Spirit being a vision for what growth looks like in our lives. We'll talk a little bit about that later today. And then last week we kind of started looking at this metaphor for spiritual growth that Jesus talked about in the New Testament portion of the Bible in one of the biographies of his life in the book of John, and how he described the relationship that we have with him and how that produces fruit in our lives, very much in the way that a relationship between a vine and the vineyard and the winekeeper happens. And so we've had a tour guide for a bit of this insight. I've been spent some time, we videotaped time with Kreso Mikulic, who owns the Vinoklet Vineyard, which is over in the Coleraine area of Cincinnati. And Kreso is kind of just walking us through the principles of how he produces the most fruit over time. And we've been relating it back to this metaphor that Jesus gives us. So we're going to take a look at a little bit more of that in a moment. And this time, Kreso is going to be talking about the role of pruning in the vineyard. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. But when we do that, we're going to take up an offering. So our First Impressions volunteers are going to come. And when they do, just want you to know, if this is your first time, we're just glad you're here, excited that you join us for this series. These bags are going to come, and this is just because really the generosity of everyday folks fuels everything that happens around Crossroads. Everything that we're a part of and doing outside of this place is fueled by generosity. So when those bags come, if you're new, you can just let them pass you right on by. But for those of us who call this place home, it's an opportunity for us to be generous. And if you happen to have a bag and you're at the end of a row, when that hits the end of your row, just hold on to it once it's passed through, and one of those volunteers will take it from you. But while we take up the offering, we're going to tap back into some of the wisdom of Kreso around pruning in the vineyard. Let's take a look. Well, we're at the Vinoklet Winery with Kreso Mikulic.
Yes, correct.
And he's been kind of walking us through a day in the life of a winemaker. And I'm interested in pruning because I know that that is a very important thing that happens at any vineyard. So tell us a little bit about the importance of pruning.
Pruning is the second most important job in vineyard. Usually in all country, prune only father. Father can be 90 years old, still father its main pruner.
Even after they've given over ownership of the vineyard to the son.
Correct.
The father prunes.
Father prunes. And you can see who is boss in family who prune grapes. He knows which shoots of grapes will bring it harvest, which shoot will not bring harvest. Means that he have knowledge before he start pruning. He have to have experience at least 3 years.
So imagine that I've done my 3 years, and it's my first day, and you're going to walk me through the basics of pruning.
Yes.
You got some tools with you, and we're going to get a chance to do that. Yes. What are some of the basic things about pruning that someone needs to do?
Basic thing of pruning, you know, don't cut your finger, you know.
That's very important.
That's very important. We don't prune every day. We prune only just on January or February.
Okay.
When it's wine is dormant. And you prune all about 98% of shoots you cut it. I had to cut it, you know, between these shoots. I want, you know, that they have enough sun.
Okay.
I leave, you know, 3 or 4 buds, which is, you know, bring, you know, next year, you know, grapes. Too much grapes, you know, quality is not good. And also every illness you have to take out.
You'll go around and you'll look for illness and you'll cut that off for the sake of the health of the rest of the plant.
It's correct.
Okay.
Correct. You want loaded, you know, shoots with they have grapes. And if it doesn't have grapes, you know, you have to cut them.
But you cut the ones that can produce grapes too, right?
Yes, correct. You know, because it's too much, you know, grapes, it's not good either too. Inside here, there are still moisture. And this moisture will freeze and will bust it.
Okay.
On this one, doesn't have moisture enough. Okay. Master pruner, he will object here, you know, like this and this. It's very close.
So he will cut one of these.
He will cut one of these.
Which one will he cut?
He cuts, you know, this one in the middle.
This
one?
No.
This one.
This one.
This one, yes. And now, then everyone is separated and they can grow without, you know, protrude each other.
When we first came out here, this vine was green and all these leaves that we now have on the floor were here. And it looked like a live plant. Now it kind of looks dead. So
it's correct,
But it's this dormant. Is best for the plant.
Yes, correct.
So where this else can I cut? I want to do some more cutting.
On this one, you can cut it. This one.
Cut
you
this
can,
one right here?
Yeah, you can cut that one.
Okay.
Good. And if you said no, you can cut that one.
Cut this one here?
Yeah.
Because you talked about young and old.
Yes.
Is there a different approach to pruning when a vine is young versus when it's old?
Oh, yes, yes. When it's young, you know, you're starting, you know, see how much you will cover with vine. And you direct shoot a different way. When it's old, it's already established.
So you're going to be more aggressive at pruning young vines?
Correct.
Is that, is that safe to say? This vine, even though it looks kind of old, this is the vine that you're depending on for fruit right now.
For sure, correct.
So
correct.
This vine is this fruitful.
One, and this vine, you know, have better, you know, grapes and a better wine than this young one.
So you definitely want to prune this vine too?
This one, absolutely.
So you told us a story about how winekeepers came to understand that pruning was valuable. And it had something to do with donkeys.
Oh, well, you know, it's because donkey used to eat, when they're hungry, used to eat, you know, wines. Mm-hmm. And people in Greece, they find out, you know, wine which was eaten by donkey, you know, have better harvest.
Okay.
And they thought, you know, there are something, you know, superstition that help, you know, wine.
So they thought the donkey was
donkey
had like special
the contribution, bad power.
Okay.
But then they finally find out, you know, they start cutting too, they have same results.
Okay. So they learned from donkeys, basically donkey. Pruning by eating the vines.
Yes, correct.
That led to more fruit.
To more fruit.
And that's how we got to the place of cutting vines.
It's correct.
Okay, so I'm going to put these back in your able hands. And I just want to thank you for...
The second important thing, you know, you don't cut your fingers.
That's right. All 10 still there, so I've survived at least that. I've learned lesson one. Thank you so much for having us come out to your vineyard.
You're
it's
welcome.
Been a pleasure.
Now you'll have drink.
Yes. You can't go to a vineyard and not taste the product, right? You know, after learning about it. Just fantastic. I really enjoyed spending time with Creso and just understanding the insights around pruning. And it just continued to tie back to this metaphor that Jesus uses in John 15. We're just going to take a look at the two verses that kind of talk about pruning at the beginning of John 15 and explore a little bit of that today. Jesus says this. He says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, so that it will be even more fruitful. And there are a couple of dynamics, a couple of players in this two-verse segment right here. One is Jesus is describing himself as the true vine. And the true vine is really the roots and the trunks that support the branches of that tree. So Jesus is basically saying what we talked about last week, that there is a root structure that sets us up for the most fruit in our spiritual lives, and that is being rooted relationally in him. He says that there are branches, people who receive by faith that he is who the Bible says he is, and then through that come to a relationship with God, that we are branches connected into that true vine. But there are some other dynamics. There's another person that's mentioned in these first couple verses, and we're going to spend a lot of time talking about this person today. It's the gardener. It's the winekeeper. It's the person who does the pruning. And Jesus says that his Father is the pruner, that his Father is the one that does the pruning. And that is a reference to God the Father. The Bible teaches that God exists in a concept called the Trinity. And it's incredibly mind-blowing. I'm not going to say that I am an expert in understanding all the details of it. But the Bible teaches that God is essentially one being, but that that being exists as three distinct persons. And Jesus is making reference to that here. Jesus is saying as the true vine, it's a statement of divinity. He's saying that I am where you get life from. I am the way you get life. He says that all throughout his teaching. And he's saying that he has a divine state, that he is a part of this Godhead, the Trinity. But he's also making reference here to the Father. And the Father, I like to think of the Father as the Old Testament God, the God that's involved in speaking the words that started the earth into existence. And that is the kind of concept of the Old Testament God, but he's the Father. And Jesus, throughout his public ministry, described his relationship with the Father as that of a son, that he is in some ways functionally serving under the Father, even though they are kind of coexistent as one being. And then in the chapter that comes before, Jesus promises to his followers the Holy Spirit. And that's the third person of the Trinity. Again, details around this, and we've done some teachings on this. If you have questions about that, you can check some of those out. But just to suffice to say that what Jesus is saying is, in order for us as branches, people who are connected to the true vine, to grow spiritually, there is a relationship with the true vine, Jesus, but there's also a role that the Father plays in our lives. What Jesus is essentially saying is that fruit happens through being rooted in the vine and from being pruned by the gardener. That fruit happens when we are rooted in the vine and when we are pruned by the gardener. And so last week we talked about what does it mean to be rooted in the vine, and this week we're talking about what does it mean to be pruned by the gardener. And another word for pruning, as it's described in this passage, is really the word discipline. This is about God's discipline and the fact that sometimes in love God disciplines us. And that's what we're going to be talking about. And it's interesting because God's discipline is multifaceted. There are definitely times where God disciplines us because we're going in a direction that's inconsistent with those fruits of the Spirit. You know, when you think about fruit, fruits could be things like love, joy, peace, patience, gentleness, self-control. These are things that are described as the fruits of the Spirit. These are the fruits that should be produced in increasing measures in our lives when we're connected relationally to Jesus. When we do things that are inconsistent with that, when we do things that are the opposite of those, there is definitely discipline that leads to correction. But we're also exploring the fact that pruning is also speaking about discipline when we might be tracking in the right direction. That even when we're moving in the right direction, there are things that God does that may be painful, that may be difficult, but he's doing that for the purposes of more fruit over time. And that's what we're kind of talking about. And particularly when it comes to discipline for the purposes of more fruit, not necessarily because we're doing anything wrong, I think it's helpful to understand Jesus was pruned in this way. In his human existence, the Bible says he was fully God, but he was also fully man when he walked the earth for those 33 years, and he experienced pruning. There's this story very early in Jesus' history, a public ministry history, right before he kind of goes public with the mission that God gave him, where Jesus, it says, was led away into the desert for a 40-day period. And during that 40-day period, he went without food for the entire time. And so he was kind of at his physical weak point, you might imagine, at the end of that 40 days. And it says that at the end of that 40 days was when he was tested, or tempted, actually, by Satan, or the devil. And the devil is this fallen angel that the Bible says is opposed to everything that God is for. And in Jesus' physical weak state, after having fasted for 40 days, there was some spiritual muscle building that God imposed on him in the way of temptation. And that's a pruning process. That was a pruning process for Jesus. So even Jesus has experienced some of what we're talking about today in his humanness. And I think that's encouraging because it tells me that pruning doesn't always mean I'm doing something wrong. When I'm being disciplined by God, it doesn't mean that I'm out of order all the time. There are some times where absolutely I am and there's correction that God is doing. But there are other times where God prunes because there's just more fruit to be had. And we're going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about that. There are some surprises about pruning. And the first is that God actually does prune where there's more fruit to be had. He prunes where there's more fruit to be had. I'm going to go back to John 15:2 and read what Jesus says again about how the pruning process works in our lives. He says that he, meaning the gardener, the Father, cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit. That's kind of this correction and discipline thing. We can understand that. But he also says that while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes that it will be even more fruitful. What is that about? What is that about? Well, what I learned in spending time with Creso, and I saw it observationally and I read it in some other places, is that these vines actually have a tendency. They have a natural tendency, and the tendency is actually visually depicted here. They have a tendency to produce leaves. They have a tendency to produce leaves. And it was interesting. We'd go through the vineyard, and I'd see Creso not hesitate to pick off a leaf and throw it to the ground. And I'm like, man, these leaves look beautiful. Some of them were green. They weren't all yellow. I can understand picking off dead leaves, but even nice leaves, he would pick off. And what I had to realize is, you know what? As a winemaker, he's not interested in leaves. He could care less about leaves. What he's interested in is fruit. He wants to see fruit on these vines, but the tendency of the vine is leaves. And in the same way, we have a human tendency. And our human tendency is that we tend toward comfort as opposed to growth. Let me take that back. I'm not trying to put anything on you guys. I tend toward comfort instead of growth. I'm going to say it for me. That is a human tendency. And what happens is, even spiritually speaking, we get this misconception that actually when I'm growing spiritually, the more rooted I am in Jesus, that means my life becomes more and more comfortable. And that's just not true. That is just not true. There are these Christianese sayings, and I hate these Christianese sayings because they're wrong for the most part. One of these Christianese sayings that you hear a lot in church circles is, the safest place to be is in the center of God's will. Doesn't that sound sweet? It's wrong, but it sounds really, really sweet. It is not the safest place to be in the center of God's will. It may be the best place to be. It may be the most fruitful place to be. But I would argue there have been times when I've been in the center of God's will and it hasn't felt safe. It hasn't felt comfortable. Because God is like the winemaker. God is like clay, so he's not interested in leaves. He's not interested in comfort. Not primarily. It doesn't mean he wants discomfort every day. And we should just say right off the bat, pruning happens in seasons. I'm not saying this is something that happens all throughout your life, every day of your life. But God is ultimately interested in producing fruit in us. Growth is about fruit. And that's what God is interested in. And sometimes the best way to produce fruit is using the pruning shears. Using the pruning shears. It is impossible to think about pruning, to talk about pruning, to witness someone pruning, and then to think about applying that to your personal experience and not think about pain. And I just want to say, pruning is painful. Pruning is painful, but it's not pain for pain's sake. It's always pain for the purposes of fruit. And that's what God is interested in us. And so even where we might be tracking in the right direction, God will prune where there's more fruit to be had. I heard a story that kind of helps solidify how this plays out in someone's life. And it's actually a story that was shared by one of our friends from Mamelodi, South Africa, who was with us a couple of weeks ago. His name is Shadrach. I think we have a picture of Shadrach, one of the guys that was here. Just a fantastic guy. And this is a man who has a long-term, God-given vision for his life. Just has a vision. You talk about having a vision for the garden. This guy has a vision for his life. And his vision is to basically provide job opportunities and resources through a transportation company that he runs. Dynamics in Mamelodi are such that it's just abject poverty at every level, and you see it wherever you are in that township. And the township is 45 minutes from the big city of Pretoria. And obviously because of apartheid, what they did is they put all of the blacks in a section of the township where they would just be collected together away from opportunity. And so as a result, there are very few job opportunities that can sustain families in Mamelodi. And so one of the things that happens is a lot of people from Mamelodi, in order to find good paying jobs, jobs that would enable them to take care of their families, they have to commute 45 minutes both ways every day into the city of Pretoria to get jobs that would actually pay. There's only one problem, and that's that many of them don't have cars. So they don't have a way to get to and fro. And so what has bubbled up as a business in Mamelodi are transportation companies. And so you'll see lines of minivans when you're over there, and those minivans are owned by people who may be the drivers themselves or may be employing other drivers. And what they do is they create jobs, obviously, for the drivers, but they also create opportunities for people in Mamelodi to get to Pretoria to get better-paying jobs. And Shadrach owns one of those transportation companies. So that is the vision that God has given him, not just for his own benefit, but to provide jobs and resources and opportunities for the people in his community in Mamelodi. Fantastic vision for his life. And that's why I was blown away when I found out that because of an interaction he had here, I think last year when he came for host Mamelodi, he actually walked away from that job. He actually walked away from that business because he felt like God was pruning him in this area, and part of that pruning meant cutting off a good thing, his business. He had an interaction while he was here with someone in our community that works for a rental car company, a rental car agency, and this company had offices in Mamelodi, South Africa. And Shadrach, through times of prayer and interacting and being rooted relationally with Jesus, really felt like he was being called to give up his business, or at least to put it on hold, and actually go and work for this larger corporation because there were insights and lessons and experiences that he could learn there that will enable him, when he jumps back into his business, to set himself up for more long-term and lasting success. Fantastic idea of pruning, because here's a guy who was going to go through instant pain. Had a business, successful business, probably was going to make more in that business that year than he would if he gave up that business and went over and worked somewhere else, but he was willing to go through pain. He was willing to walk through that pain for the purposes of what God was doing to produce more fruit over time in his life. And that is the way pruning works. Even when there are good things in your life, oftentimes God will cut out good things for the purposes of even better things that produce fruit. So sometimes that means there are relationships that are good relationships, but they get cut out of your life for the purposes of maybe encouraging you to focus on some other relationships or fewer and key relationships that go deeper in your life. God will do that And that's a part of this pruning process. Sometimes that might look like career opportunities where you just have a host of opportunities available to you and it just seems like doors start closing on you. And what it is it's not that God has forsaken you or abandoned you, but maybe God is just saying, hey, there's some good things, but it's going to distract you and I want to put you here because this is what's going to set you up for the most fruit over time. God prunes where there's more fruit to be had. Surprising thing about pruning, something that is not obvious right off the bat, but it goes against this tendency that we have for comfort, and I think that's why this is a way that God prunes in our lives. Another insight into pruning is kind of implied in what Jesus says in John 15, but said a little bit more directly in some other parts of the Bible. And the second surprise about pruning is that God's pruning or God's discipline is love. His discipline and his pruning is love. I thought about saying, you know, for this point, I thought about saying, well, God's pruning is loving. God's discipline is loving, but really that cuts it short. It is, in fact, his love. I know this as a parent. If you're a parent, you understand this implicitly because you know that if all you do to love your child is affirm all of the good things that they do, they are not going to get the full extent of your love. They're just not. And the reason is because there are going to be times where they don't do a good thing. There are going to be times where they make missteps. And so any parent who wants to give their child the full extent of their love knows that, yes, I want to affirm every time my child does something positive. I want to catch them doing right. I want to praise that. But there are going to be times where I need to get down on their level and I need to course correct. There are going to be times where I need to say, you know what? This is an uncomfortable situation for you, but I actually want to encourage you to move in this direction because there's fruit that will be produced if you walk through discomfort. And as a parent, you're limiting the love that you give your child if you don't do both of those things. And this is how God works as a master pruner in our lives. We get the full extent of his love, not only when he blesses us or does things to take care of us, but he has to correct us. He has to discipline us if we're going to experience the fullness of his love. And this is said very directly in the book of Hebrews in the Bible. It's a letter that was written to the early Christ followers. And in Hebrews chapter 12, it says this in verse 7, endure hardship as discipline. That there will be hardship in this life. Just because you're rooted relationally with Jesus doesn't mean you're just stepping into a more comfortable life. Endure hardship. It will happen as discipline. And when it happens, God is treating you as sons. For what son is not disciplined by his father? And there's a powerful word in this verse that, quite frankly, has lost its impact in our culture. And it's the word son. It's the word son. When we hear that word son, what we think about is a biological relationship. We say, okay, there's a mother and a father who have produced an offspring. The offspring is male, therefore the offspring is their son. We go through that mental process. That's in essence what we think of when we hear the word son. And we know there's love associated with that. We know that means they're part of a family and boys are awesome. We know that, but it doesn't have the same impact in our culture. That wasn't like a subtle dig on girls. I don't know why I said that. I haven't said that in any other service. So, anyway. But that word son just doesn't have the same impact to us that it would have had to a first century listener, to someone who was hearing those words and reading those in a letter. Because in that day and age, the word son had incredible, incredible cultural and identity impact. See, to be a son meant that you had an identity. You had an identity and you were identified as the son of some man who was the son of a family legacy. So it was this bigger piece of identity, and it eclipsed any other identity you had in your life to be a son. As a matter of fact, last names in that day and age often were bar, whatever. So for instance, there's this guy in the Bible called Simon Bar Jonah. The word bar means son of Jonah. So his identity, his last name was, I am the son of Jonah. That was his primary identity, and it meant this powerful, powerful thing. And it also meant that as a son, you had a clear mission. There's a clear mission, a clear purpose, and your purpose is to extend the family lands or defend the family's honor or carry on the family's business. But you had this very clear mission in being a son. That's one of the reasons why, particularly under the Roman law, you had the opportunity to actually adopt slaves and make them sons. You could adopt a slave and make them your son. And when you did that, it was this incredible, incredible gift of giving them an identity and giving them a clear mission and the resources and the support and the education and all that they needed to achieve that. And what the Bible says in many places is that's exactly what has happened to us when we enter into relationship with Jesus. That we actually become sons of God. We actually become a son. And as a son, a loving father disciplines us. Why does he discipline us? Because he knows the identity that he's given us. And what he's doing in discipline is he's forming and shaping us and pruning us to better reflect the identity of being a son of God. And also, he disciplines us because we also get a mission when we become a son. And the mission we get is to join God in the work that he's doing in the world. The loving and redemptive work that he's doing throughout all of human history. We now are actually sons co-participating with our father in that very work. And in the midst of that context, he would be withholding love from us if he didn't discipline us as sons. So God's discipline and his pruning is love. But another insight about pruning, probably the surprise for all of this, is what God asks of us when we're in the process of discipline. You know, when you go back to John 15, what you won't find where it says, and you as the branch, here's what you're supposed to do. Here's this checklist of things that you need to do when God is disciplining you. You won't find it. You won't find it, and that's because God simply asks that you and I surrender. That's all he asks of us. You know, these branches have a tendency, but at the same time, these branches really don't have any other opportunity other than they don't have a chance to revolt. They don't revolt against the winemaker. And so when the winemaker cuts and prunes, they're surrendering to the bigger vision and to the loving eye of a master pruner, of the Father who prunes them. And it's the same with us. And I think that's why later on in Hebrews, it says this in chapter 12. It says, no discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Duh. Clearly the book of Hebrews was written by Captain Obvious, right? So get that. But later on it says, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. I want to keep this up here and just kind of talk about that. Why does God discipline us? Why does pruning happen in our lives? It is always for the purposes of fruit. It is always to produce a harvest in us. And this verse describes what that harvest is. And it says, first, there is a harvest of righteousness when we are disciplined by God. And that word righteousness, it doesn't just mean we become better people and we're goody-two-shoe people. That's not what it means. It's actually a word that describes holistic living. Whole living, full living, life as God intended it. And what it's saying is when God, as a loving master pruner and as a loving father, he disciplines us, what he's doing is he's producing a more whole life in us. He's producing the fruits of the Spirit in us. He's producing fruitful relationships through this process of discipline. It actually leads to a fuller, richer life when we are disciplined by the Father. But not only that, but it actually produces a harvest of peace. A harvest of peace. See, the safest place to be is not necessarily in the will of God in the sense that that's about being a safe place, but it is the most peaceful place to be. Because when I'm rooted relationally with Jesus, what happens is even in the midst of pain, even in the midst of difficulty, I know that God is dealing with me like a son, and I can have peace in that. And I can have peace that at the end of the day, I'm surrendered to a master gardener who knows the vision he has for my life, knows what fruit looks like, and is going to discipline and correct me toward a fruitful life, a life of fullness, a wholeness in my life. And that's a harvest of peace. But that harvest is only available, it says, to those who have been trained by discipline, to those who have surrendered to the shears. Speaking of surrender, something's going to happen on Wednesday night here that you need to come back for it. You just need to come back for it. We do last Wednesday at the end of every month, the last Wednesday of every month. It's a time we get together for more worship through singing. There's communion that happens and just some cool things like that. But this Wednesday, we're doing something in addition to that, and that's we're doing baptisms. And I don't know if you've heard the number or not, but there are 79 people signed up to get baptized on Wednesday. 79 people. So cool. And the reason I'm excited about that is because baptism is really a public statement of surrendering to the Master Gardener. It really is. And these are people, when you hear some of the stories, just the snippets, you'll see how God gets involved in people's lives. It's going to be awesome. If you want to be fired up, you want to jolt in your week, you need to be here 7 p.m. in Oakley for last Wednesday baptism. Just going to be a phenomenal celebration that we get to experience together. And these are people who understand what it looks like to surrender to the Master Gardener. And I understand this surrender because it's really part and it's just core to the story of how God has worked in my life. And particularly, I would say there was a season in my life, and I feel like in many ways I'm still in this season, but there was a season of my life where God did some major pruning, some major discipline in my life. And it really was on both sides of this equation. And it was about the process, kind of a four-year process that led to me coming on staff at Crossroads. And the one reason why I hesitate sometimes to share that story is because it can give you the conclusion that at the end of this process, you're going to end up in full-time vocational work at a church somewhere. And that's not God's vision for everyone. In fact, I would say that it's not God's vision for most of us. And that there is more impact that we can have as people of God when we're outside of that context of a church environment, when we're just loving people in our neighborhood and doing things on our job to love people. And I just don't want you to come away from my story and believe that. But there are some things about my story around this idea of surrender that I think are impactful and certainly have impacted me. And quite frankly, my story begins in the dirt. My story begins in the dirt. One of the things that I heard from Creso and from other winemakers is that there are times when vines, because they are just weighed down by fruit, they wind up dragging along the ground. And when that happens, obviously they're more susceptible to disease and they're more susceptible to sickness. And so there needs to be an intervention. And what often happens in that situation is the winemaker gets in the dirt. And even though it's a major course correction, they will lift up that vine and begin to root them, trellis them, tie them up to get them growing in a different direction. Significant course correction. And for me, that started my process of pruning. It was a discipline thing. I was 4 months from getting married, and I was like 2 weeks away, maybe a couple weeks from that, away from starting a job at Crossroads. I had accepted a job on staff, and I was going to be moving into this job, looking forward to it. I had turned in my resignation at P&G, hadn't worked my last day, but had turned in my resignation and was just looking forward to all these changes and transitions in my life, getting married, having a new job. There's only one problem, and the problem is my heart was in the dirt. My heart had been dragging along because unbeknownst to my fiance, I had kept it from her, and unbeknownst to many people that I was in community with around here, I had been struggling with an addiction to pornography for years. And so I was about to walk into a marriage, basically, and going to wreck it, because that behavioral pattern was going to lead only to the death of that marriage. It couldn't bring life to the marriage. And it certainly meant that I wasn't in a place of health to come on staff at a church and actually talk about what does it look like to honor God with your life, even in those areas. I just wasn't in a place to do that. And let me just tell you, I'd love to say that for me what happened was an epiphany. And I just felt the need to come clean, and I began to walk through this process. I'd love to tell you that was the case. It wasn't. I got caught. And when I got caught, I got confronted with all of the consequences that come with that, and I got confronted with the need to tell the truth because there was nowhere else to go. I couldn't hide behind the lies anymore. I got caught. And I remember going through the process of confessing to Maria, who was then my fiance, and recognizing that she has every right to walk away from me. I thought I was going to be married in 4 months, and now she has every right to walk out the door and never come back. And going to friends around here at Crossroads and confessing this, people who were looking forward to being co-workers with me on staff and needing to come clean about the struggles that I was having. And I just remember going through that process, and I remember many days literally not wanting to get out of bed. I remember days of saying, I would love to die tonight. It was in the dirt. It was in the dirt. It was the most painful correction, the most painful discipline that I ever experienced. And God was totally taking out the pruning shears on me. But you know what I realized? It wasn't like God was at a distance taking out those pruning shears. God was in the dirt with me. And God saw that I was dragging along the ground. And I really believe now that what he was saying was, son, this is not the identity I have for you. And I have an identity and a mission that is different. And so even though you're going to have to walk through pain, I'm going to lift you up and I'm going to course correct you. And yes, you're going to walk through pain. You're going to have to walk through healing. You're going to have to walk through confessing and forgiving. You're going to have to walk through a process, but I'm doing that because there's more fruit to be had. And every time I share that aspect of my story, I talk to Maria about it because it's really not just my story, it's our story. And one of the incredible fruit that I experienced from that was the fruit of forgiveness. She actually did marry me. And to this day, it's like she had every right to walk away. And she chose to hang in there with me. So I experienced that fruit. But I asked her, I said, well, what else would you say is fruit that came from that process? And she said, you tell people there's absolutely fruit, that we have an honesty in our relationship that we never had before and probably wouldn't have had. Would I have drawn it up that way? She's like, no, I wouldn't have drawn it up that way. I wouldn't have drawn that out. But you know what? God has done something, and not only that, but you tell people that there is a fruit of community. that we have in our marriage, people who came around us and challenged you to grow and encouraged me as I was making this adjustment to dealing with your issues. I would never want to lose those relationships. Those have been incredible relationships, many of them lasting as people have come alongside of us in our marriage. But I look at that pruning process and I say, at the time, man, that was so painful. But there's no doubt there was fruit that came out of that. And I'd love to tell you that that was the end of the pruning for me. Actually, it was only phase one. It was just phase one. So fast forward a couple years later, another opportunity to come on staff. And this time, it was the dream job. I mean, you know, like if I could draw it out on a blank sheet of paper, this is the job I wanted to do. I feel like it matched my calling, it matched my passion, matched my gifts, my background. Awesome opportunity. And I really felt like, man, this is a good thing. So definitely this must be God, right? You know, good thing equals God. Yes, this has got to be good. There's only one nagging question that just kept coming up in the midst of the decision process for me, and it was the question of significance. And was I waiting to draw my significance from getting my dream job? And did that mean that I didn't have significance if I wasn't doing full-time ministry, if I wasn't on staff as a pastor? And the reason I wrestled with that question is because of my family of origin. Because I tell people, in my family, being a pastor is the same as being a doctor or a lawyer in other families. Like, whenever I go home and I spend time with my extended family, it's a pastor's convention. That's what it is. Like, everybody's a pastor. It's just the family business. I don't know. It's like everybody does that. And so I had grown up and kind of internalized that really I wasn't going to be fully living out my significance until I became a pastor. Like, all this other stuff was good stuff, but at the end of the day, I really needed to be a pastor before I started living, before I started serving God. And so this wrestling with significance caused me to need to say no to the dream job. Was the dream job sinful? Was the dream job me being in the dirt? No, it was a good thing, but God was cutting that out because there was a fruitfulness that he wanted in me, and it was the fruit of knowing that my significance doesn't lie on my job title. So I had to say no. And I saw some fruit. I saw other fruit from that, like the fruit of being able to invest in relationships with guys at work. And one of the things I'm most excited about in that time period, had two very close friends that I got close with, started inviting them to Crossroads, and it was called Next Level at the time. But during a Next Level baptism, I actually got to baptize them and saw them come into relationship with Jesus. Awesome. And I know that would not have happened if I was a pastor here at Crossroads. It only happened because I was able to do life with them in the context of our work environment. And I just recognize that I don't need to have this title to be used to advance God's kingdom. I don't need that. My significance doesn't come from the job title. My significance has to come from God and my relationship and my rootedness in him as a son. And I'd love to tell you that that was the end of my pruning journey. No, that was just phase two. Phase three, fast forward a couple of years, 2007 this time. And it was interesting because this one was a very unique struggle and wrestle for me. Another opportunity to come on staff. Is this the right time? Praying through that, thinking through that. And in the midst of it, really recognizing that something was starting to happen after 9 years with Procter & Gamble. A little phenomena I like to call the golden handcuffs. See, I had been there long enough to get a couple promotions, to get a couple raises, to move up band levels, and to start to be eligible for bonuses and other things. And can I just tell you, my wife and I were getting very accustomed to that lifestyle. And we were very comfortable with the golden handcuffs that were coming on. And so, you know, when I was thinking through that one, you know what I started to tell myself? You don't need to be a paid pastor to do ministry. I love being a volunteer. It's great being a volunteer. It actually pays better to be a volunteer. So, you know, I'm like, no, I don't know if I want to do this. And really the nagging question that I was wrestling with that time was, okay, but where is the source of your security? Is your security based on the end of the month paycheck and how much that is and what that means financially for you? Or is your security based on your relationship with God who ultimately meets your needs? And I wrestled with that one. And I got to this place where I felt like God was very clear. You can choose either path. I'm not telling you one or the other, but what I'm trying to prune out of you is this need for your security to come from how much money you make. And in the midst of that, that's where things started to blossom for me. And I understood that for me, leaving was the right call. That was when I did leave P&G, but I told people then, and I believe it now, I didn't leave P&G to come to Crossroads as much as I left P&G to step out on faith and say that God is my security, and whatever he calls me to, today that's Crossroads, tomorrow it may not be, that's going to be the source of my security. And so I just look back on those examples, whether it was being in the dirt and sinful patterns that needed to move out of my life, or whether it was wrestling with significance and saying no to the dream job, or whether it was saying yes to this opportunity to come on staff, but really it was about wrestling through a security issue. At the end of the day, God was just producing fruit. He was about fruit. And at the end of all of that, I see that there's an underlying question. I think this is true no matter what you might, if you feel like you're in a pruning process right now at any level, I would say that at the end of the day, there's really an underlying question that God is asking you. And the question is, do you trust the gardener? Do you trust the gardener? Really, it's about surrender, is about trust. And God is asking us, do we trust him? And so we're going to do something now, spiritual exercise, an opportunity for us to maybe consider that question. And for many of us, maybe we'll have an opportunity to respond to that question right now. When you came in, you might have noticed that there are ficus trees on every level, and there are actually ficus trees behind me. And the reason that those ficus trees are here is because, like vines on a vineyard or vines on a branch, ficus trees need to be pruned regularly in order to have the best bloom. And so what we're going to do today is give you an opportunity to think through, what does it mean for me to trust? You see, for some of us, this issue of pruning is an issue of discipline. There is something in our lives that is inconsistent with those fruits of the Spirit. It's inconsistent with God's heart. It's wrecking of relationships in your life, maybe wrecking you personally, and it needs to be rooted out of your life. And that is what discipline looks like. But at the end of the day, the question is really about, do you trust that God removing that from your life, even if it means walking through pain, is best for you and it's for the purposes of fruit? That's for some of us what this surrender process and the pruning process feels like and looks like right now. For others of us, it's a bit different. Maybe we're tracking in a direction, we're growing, we're in a good place with God, but there's this pruning process that's happening. There are relationships that seem to be cut out of our lives, and we don't understand why. It just seems like God has us in a very uncomfortable place. And for us, maybe it's not turning away from any sinful behavior, but it's just simply saying, I'm going to release myself to trust you. If this is what it means for me to bear fruit, then I trust you with that. I'm going to trust you. And so I want to invite you guys to stand. And we're going to sing some songs, and these songs really just reflect the heart of wrestling through this question of what does it look like to trust the gardener and making statements of trust to the gardener. And what I would encourage you to do is, if you're in a place of pruning right now in your life and you want to say, yes, I trust you, to God, there are pruning shears by all of these ficus trees. I'm just going to encourage you to come up to one that's closest to you, and again, they're all around the room, and just cut off a piece. Just cut off a piece, and cutting off that piece is simply a statement to the master gardener, to the God who created you and knows you intimately, that if this is what pruning looks like in my life, I will surrender to that pruning process. And maybe you're at a point where cutting off a tree makes sense for you. Maybe you're not in a season of pruning, but you can just sit and listen to these songs and let this be a chance for you to just consider what this might look like in your life. But wherever you are, and particularly if you know that God is prompting you with pruning right now, I want to encourage you to take a bold step and to cut a piece off this tree, to make a statement that even when it's difficult, and even when I don't know how, I will trust you as the master gardener of my life. Take a step today.